The following is intended for mature audiences only. Discretion is advised.
Hey, what's going on? So I'm giving you an update from the car. I'm not going to be doing that a lot, but I figured let's do it at least right now because I want to talk about this and I want to get good at updating when things are happening. So this is first day truly on the road. We left Baltimore. We're in Richmond, Virginia. And we got here 10 hours late. Let me explain. A couple weeks ago, I ordered, and I've been researching and figuring it out because I need to figure out how to carry my diabetes medication for the next 2.5, 3 months, whatever. And it needs to be refrigerated. And by the way, insulin's weird. They tell you to refrigerate, but you don't have to refrigerate it after you open it, which is counterintuitive. I think it's just the pens. You get a supply and they can only last so long. Like the amount of time it takes after you open a pen, the amount of time it takes you to use it is less than time it'll go bad. So it's like if it's sitting, because they give you a supply. Anyway, I don't know. I haven't figured that out yet. So what I was looking into was car fridges. And I found one, reasonable price. It's battery operated, but the battery operated one was not reasonably priced, but it's car accessible. And I found one and I bought it. I ordered it. And it was scheduled to come one day before I was supposed to leave town. Apparently, they don't do an expedited Christmas shipping. And it showed up a day late. It did not show up yesterday. It showed up today at 4:35 p.m., which means I left Baltimore for Richmond at 5 o'clock. 4:55 for an 8 o'clock show in Richmond. And I would love to tell you the name of the place, but the business just got sold, and this was their last show, and he didn't find out. The host, Will Miner, great guy. I did a gig with him down here a couple of years ago, and when I was trying to find a gig to replace the gig I thought I had, his Friday night show at a brewery popped up, and I went, oh, perfect. He was like, oh, dude, I haven't seen you since I was doing shows in the back of my pickup, which is like the most Virginia thing ever said. But so I'm not happy about leaving as late as I did. I would love to have left much earlier, taken my time, not have to worry about traffic, not have to worry about the snow I drove through. Yes, it was snowing, just flurries, but here's the thing. It's like, I don't like driving in the rain. I don't like driving when it's wet. I don't like driving in traffic. I mean, who does? But reason being is I can't drive, I don't want to say recklessly, I can't drive at the speed that I want to drive at. I have to be more cautious, and that slows me down when I'm on a time crunch. Not advantageous. So we got here, and I, to my surprise, to my chagrin, to my delight, room was packed, hot audience. Everyone was having a good time and laughing. There were some good comedians, there weren't some good comedians. But here's the thing, just go back, rewind to the things that I've been talking about. It was a diverse audience and a diverse lineup. I mean, there was literally two people who were transitioning on the show. I mean, it's an open mic. He lets anyone on, but like just to have, you don't think about that when you think about Virginia. Like you forget, you know, if you know Northern Virginia, it's very liberal because it's D.C. Richmond's in the middle of nowhere, but I know it as the punk scene. You know, very many years ago, it was a punk metal town. Great scene for music. But I forget, there's a liberal arts college here in Richmond. So you have a, you know, diverse group of individuals living and creating art in this town. And I really need to spend more time in Richmond. It's not that far away. I need to get to know that. I forget, it's also like urban, like streetwise. Like, you know, the design of the streets are grid patterns and small streets and buildings and you know, tight-knit, close proximity places, you know, which I love. I love living in a city. Boston's not a city. I love living in Baltimore City. I would love to live in New York City. I would enjoy living in D.C. I like a city, a good urbanized environment. Anyway. So the drive down. Nothing happened, thankfully, but it's white knuckling the entire time. I'm driving. Here's the thing about it. Now, I'm going to get into like the nitpicky of or like the very minute details of mid-Atlantic traffic patterns and road constructions and the way things are built and layouts, and if that does not interest you, I'm sorry. If you also can't understand what I'm talking about, I'm also sorry. If you're from the area, you get this. So I'm coming down from Baltimore to I-95. I'm coming down I-95, Interstate 95, runs the entire East Coast from Florida to Maine. You know, the major thoroughway, you had to have heard of it. And it connects to 495, which is the beltway that encircles Washington, D.C. And now from age 18 to 31, I drove from Baltimore to the D.C. area a couple times a week for originally college and then for work. And if it wasn't work, there was concerts. We were always going to D.C. for concerts, even before I started going to school down here. Because in Baltimore, there weren't any shows. There weren't any venues for the music we wanted to see. So we're always constantly coming to D.C. and Northern Virginia and, you know, Nissan Pavilion and Capitol Ballroom and Nations. Most of those things I said are not around anymore. But anyway, the point being, I'm well familiar with it. And I was thinking about this while I was driving down, that this trip is the most I'm ever going to be away from home at one time. It's the most driving I'm ever going to do. Just this week, I'm going to be driving farther south than I've ever driven. And I was thinking about that. As I was coming down 95, when you reach 495, it splits in two directions. You go right, you go left. Both of them go around DC and reconnect with 95 on the bottom end. And for years, because of college and work and concerts, I took a right. Very rarely did I ever take a left. They go around that way. I mean, I did a couple times and for whatever, you know. Most of the time, if I was going straight to D.C., instead of taking 495, I'd take 295 into Route 50, New York Ave, whatever you want to call it. You know, 295 runs parallel to I-95 to help you out. Rarely do I ever go left. And I realized as I was driving down, I was literally driving on a part of 495 I don't think I've ever been on before. When I did this East Coast tour back in 2021, I was driving from Boston to North Carolina to Greensboro for the North Carolina Comedy Festival, did shows on the way down, did shows on the way back. But when I was driving down, I remembered I had a show in D.C., like McLean, Northern Virginia area, and I took that left. And I left from there to Greensboro, and I drove overnight, much like I'm about to do now. And I realized I don't think I've ever connected to 95 by driving down 495, taking the right on 495 and going all the way around to 95. And I'm driving down 95 and I'm thinking, wow, I've never driven this section of 95. I think about how close Virginia is, how many times I go to it, and how many times, but I only go to certain areas. Occasionally I go to like O-Town or Alexandria. Most of the time we're going to Manassas, which is like you go to 490, you go down 95, you get on 495, then you get on Route 66 and you just go west. You bang a right on the Route 66 and you go west to Manassas, to Nissan Pavilion or whatever they're calling it now. And you go to the concert and you turn around and you go back. And I was like, this is cool. I have never driven down. And I look up and I was like, oh, King's Dominion. To King's Dominion, and I was thinking about the times I've been to King's Dominion. I was like, maybe once, maybe twice, maybe a school trip, maybe a family trip. Definitely went with my friend John and his wife and his like brother-in-law, cousin, something like that. You know, when I was in my 20s before I moved away, so it was early 20s. But I didn't drive. And as I was driving out, I was at King's Dominion. How did we do, back in high school, like I think senior skip day, me and my friend Arashdeep Singh, bless his heart, did, you know, got a couple of friends together and we drove to Six Flags. I don't remember where Six Flags is. I also remember now that I didn't drive the car. Arashdeep drove and I fucked with him hard. All right, so this trip we did, you know, we're high school seniors. We're figuring our lives out for the first time. This is the 90s, it's 1999. There's no internet. We're lucky printed out MapQuest directions. And we gather at a friend's house. We get in our two cars, three cars, whatever it is. We start driving away. We get some gas. And as the car's pulling out of the, one of the cars pulling out of the gas station, it just breaks down. What? So So we're like, well, this is, all right, fine. You have to get in this car. We'll squeeze all in and we'll drive from here. Just in the two cars, leave it. And you'll figure out how to fix it when you get back. And as Rajdeep and I are pulling out of the driveway of the gas station, I decide to fuck with him. And I mess with him. And I just casually, as he's not looking, just knock his car into neutral. And he's driving on a thing, and vroom, vroom, vroom. And he's like, it's not killing, but it's revving. What happened? I think I just overflowed the engine, and I think I just messed up my car the way she did. And I was like, ha, 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 no, it's a neutral. I'm messing with you. He's like, don't do that. I'm already freaked out enough. Bless this guy's heart. He went into the military. He went into the Marines. I don't know how. Quick another story about this guy. Moved here when he was in middle school from India with his family. Friend ever since. Like, to me, I don't care that you're from India. We're friends. Whatever. You're a cool dude. You know, he's a nerdy guy. One of the things we did that summer after graduation is we saw the American Pie movie together. We saw Star Wars Phantom Menace together. Pivotal movies for my teenage graduation year. But one of the things we did that summer is I took him rappelling, rock climbing and rappelling. All right, no rock climbing. We did rappelling. We just tied off ropes and we swung down off buildings. He was afraid of heights, and that's why I took him. Because I wanted him to get over that fear of heights. And we went to Fort McHenry, which is this, you know, War of 1812 park that's in Baltimore County. Right outside, you know, it's in Edgemere, right outside of where I grew up with that dog. I go there all the time, camped over their night there. And, you know, they had a Halloween fright night throughout the whole thing. Like, it's well-established little park. You know, like park, like park rangers kind of park. You know what I mean? We tie off these buildings and we lean off and I teach them how to rappel. And, you know, I'm running a safety line at the bottom. By the way, safety line is just me tightening the rope or just pulling it down when he's not feeling comfortable, when he's feeling just in case he falls or whatever. I pull that line tight and it stops him. This is, by the way, my gear. Like, I was a rock climbing instructor for a little while after this. Like, I was a big, huge rock climbing nerd when I was young. I loved it. Loved rappelling. I would just tie off things and just jump off things and slide down a rope all the time. And he goes out, goes in the Marines, he does basic training, he comes back home for basic training. You know, he got deployed 2001, the whole thing, Afghanistan, you know. You know what happens. He was out in there. That before he got out, though, he came back home, and I visited him, and, you know, after a couple months at boot camp, and he's like, hey, man, I want to thank you for taking me rappelling. I was like, why? He's like, because that's, we had to do that, and I felt comfortable doing that because you took me to do it. I got over my fear. You got me over my fear of heights, and I didn't have to worry about having a fear of heights in front of a bunch of other Marine boot camp trainees. I'm thinking about that, you know, because I see King's Dominion and thinking about Six Flags and all that. And then I realize, yeah, back in, like, in 2003, the bands I managed, we did a East Coast, we did Virginia Beach. I drove all of us to Virginia Beach. I crashed my car in Virginia Beach. So I'm pretty sure I have driven this section of 95 before. I crashed my 2001 Ford Focus, my 2000 Ford Focus. I think that's what it was. A 2000 Ford Focus, 2001 Ford Focus. The brand new car I had. I just turned 21, maybe 20. Yeah, 21. I did a trip to New York when I turned 21. I went and saw a band up there. They played in the public library in Queens. The Queens Public Library. We did a punk rock show in a library in Queens. I mean, is there anything more punk rock than that? Than ignoring a shh from a librarian? But it was that was a good fun trip. It was the first time going to New York. I took a bus up by myself. First time traveling by myself. That wasn't in my car. I just had no friends with me. I did that trip. I hung out in the Hasidic Jewish part of Brooklyn with one of the bandmates that stayed at his place. I went into a traditional New York deli, the bodega, for the first time. Quite an experience. Queens, the home of the Ramones, the home of Spider-Man. Peter Parker, Queens. Yeah. And I took the bus back, picked up my car from travel lot, started rushing my way to work, and the transmission died in my 94 Plymouth Sundance. So the next few weeks, I cashed in my, you know, savings and stocks, and I bought a car, 2000 Ford Focus. So this is a couple years later. I had to be 21, so it was 2002, maybe 2003. We drive down, we get everybody up in the two cars in the van that we had all the gear in, and we drive down to Virginia Beach. We're supposed to do an East Coast tour. I used to manage a bunch of punk bands, three of them at one time. And two of them, we were driving to Virginia Beach to do the only show that got booked. And this is like 2002, 2003, where it's like, there was not social media. There weren't shows online. We barely had AOL and some Messenger. So it's like trying to find places to plan a tour and find people. And it was impossible. I had took on a Herculean task that I was not prepared for. And I feel bad that, you know, everybody took off from work and we went to do this week long of shows, and it turned out to be one show. We played this little bar outside of like Norfolk, Virginia, and we had a good time and we had fun. And a couple of guys drove off different direction to the house we were staying at, gets lost, and I go flooring it through Virginia Beach area, Norfolk, Chesapeake, whatever it was, trying to find them, not knowing where I'm going. Instead of sending the guy who lived there to go get them, I'm going to be the hero. I'm the manager. I'm taking care of this. I veer off the road because it's all right. Driving down the road, flooring it, thinking I'm on the right road. I'm not. And it ends, and I veered to miss a beautiful 67 cherry red Mustang. Go off the road, smash, kill my car. Brand new car. Luckily, the guy who was hosting us worked at an auto dealership. Got me a good deal for parts to fix the car. A week later, I had to take a, you know, we all squeezed back into the van the next day and just drive back. Dejected that my brand new car, that brand new to me car, just got smashed and killed. Had a week later take a bus down back to the Virginia Beach, Norfolk, whatever it was. Paul's Outer Bank, that was the name of the bar that we played at. And get my car and drive back to Baltimore, where the bands were playing another show at Hal Daddy's. If you're listening to the podcast, you know about Hal Daddy's. Yep. We talked to the doorman, Jack, of Hal Daddy's. He was a guest on the podcast, and I made it just in time for the set. Walked in, like, oh, Dennis made it. And I was like, yeah, my car is not in great shape. They didn't do a great job fixing it. And here I am on the road again, up and down I-95, in my car, making a new trip. I'm doing it by myself. I mean, with my dog, who is named Sister. I know, you heard your name. Why don't you take a nap, baby? It's in the middle of the night.
Thank you guys so much. I suffer from sleep apnea. You don't know what sleep apnea is? That is when your body seeks revenge on you for eating a cheeseburger by slowly strangling you in your sleep. I did cure my sleep apnea. The way I cured my sleep apnea is I lost 80 pounds.
Woo!
And then gained back 20, so I didn't cure sleep apnea as much as I put it on pause for a while. The best part about curing sleep apnea, losing a bunch of weight because I no longer snore when I fall asleep at my desk at work. So, by the way, this guy, I'm currently driving from Boston to Florida to LA for a three-month comedy tour. I do want to let you know this comedy tour is brought to you by Massachusetts Unemployment. So.
Here I am doing it again by myself. I've done so many trips by myself. I've traveled more by myself with no other people than I have traveled with friends. I'm not sad about that. Not in any way, shape, or form. I like traveling. I don't mind traveling by myself. There's times where I think about that. I'm not going to be able to spend the amount of time in the cities that I should. I'm not going to be able to take advantage of the cities that I'm visiting, tourist-wise and scene-wise. Like, I was just having a great conversation with Will and another comedian about the Richmond scene. I was like, I don't really know the Richmond comedy scene the way that I, you know, thought I knew it. This was refreshing. This was a great start to the tour. To come into a packed room of people. Unfortunately, three quarters of them pretty much had left by the time I got up there. So, as you see, They had laughs. They enjoyed it. You know, stuff I'm working on about the diabetes, you know, now I'm carrying around all this medicine now for my heart and for diabetes now. And it's a big part of trying to make sure I keep track of what I'm doing. Like right now, in about an hour, I have to take medication because it's almost, it's 10 o'clock now. At 11 o'clock, I have to take medicine. I might take it early. It's fine if I take it early. Just so I can have the pills before I get on the road and do a 5-hour drive. I mean, I might pull over somewhere and probably take a nap on the way down to Greensboro. You know, I'm hoping to get to Greensboro early so, you know, I can see something in the city. I can do something in Greensboro before my show tonight, which I'm excited for. It's going to be a great show. I love performing with the Idiot Box. Jenny Stesho, who runs the place, she's a hilarious comedian. She's an awesome person. She runs an awesome club. She's super nice. I read, like, it was messaging her months ago when about this. She goes, yeah, we'll get you something. Don't worry. I'll figure it out. And she did. And I'm so excited to be doing the show. It's going to be a fun time. There's going to be a good audience there, I'm sure. You know. But tonight was a good, after the whole day of sitting around waiting for this FedEx truck to show up, that shows up. I get this window of 2:45 to 4:45. I'm like, please show up closer to the 2:45 side than the 4:45 side. And no, he shows up at 4:35. And I have to figure out how to work this cooler, and it doesn't have enough as much space as it as I was hoping, and it's big and it's bulky. But the medicine's on chill. We got some food on chill. And we're going to be good to go. After this whole day of anxiety of waiting for this thing, if it's going to happen, if it's going to make it, if I'm going to be able to do this, if I'm going to be able to get out of the house on time, if I'm going to be able to drive through the snow and the wet roads and be able to make it. And I did. There was a great audience there, and everyone was cool and friendly, and everyone loved Sister, because of course they love Sister. She's the bestest, aren't you, baby? So, it was a good start. I'm happy for that. I got to keep thinking and believing that the rest of these shows are going to be as good, if not better. So we're in Greensboro. Sister and I. Hi. Say hi, Sister.
Hi, Sister.
All right. I did not want to stay in a hotel. Not this early into the trip. As we were driving overnight from Richmond to Greensboro, Sister's still not getting used to the car. She pants a lot. She's very uncomfortable. And I'm hoping this trip's going to get her used to being in a car. But as we were driving down here, I would pull over occasionally to take a nap, and she would not go to sleep. And I need her to be rested. I have to keep her well-being in mind on this trip, because she can't advocate for herself, and I need her. So I tried twice. We pulled over. Oh, and here's the thing. I wasn't even tired. I, at no point during the drive, in the middle of the night, dozed off, nodded off, felt like, I even pulled over and I stopped and I tried to go to sleep and I couldn't. I was like, all right, well, let's just move on. And somewhere around 5:30 in the morning, when we got to Greensboro, we were getting something to eat. By the way, I went to Biscuitville and it is terrible. Do not go there. And I was looking for a place to get breakfast that was like a nice sit down place. Nice, like not fancy, schmancy, but. And I saw Biscuitville, it was very close. I was like, oh, this looks like maybe a southern local version of an IHOP. No, it's not. It's McDonald's, basically. It was not good food. Not even by fast food standards, it was terrible. The eggs, powdered eggs, of course, you're gonna, you know, scrambled powdered eggs. No surprise there, honestly. So, but they were completely bland. The pancake was thicker and fluffier than a McDonald's big breakfast pancake, but more rubbery, and also had no flavor whatsoever. The biscuit was a nice crumbly southern biscuit, but still somehow rubbery. Like, how do you make a rubbery crumbly biscuit at the same time? I don't know. It needed salt. If the biscuit had some salt, it would have been salvageable. Bacon was the only good thing. I mean, it was actually bacon. Unlike, like if you go to McDonald's, their bacon is like a wafer thin piece of slice of paper thin bacon. So the bacon was legit. Sausage patty was awful. It was like dog food. It was terrible. But while we're sitting there eating breakfast, I made the decision. Let me look up, see if I got a nice hotel room for cheap. And I can't keep doing this. I have to monitor the places I go to and how much I'm spending. But I wanted her to be able to have just for that night, at least for that day, get something. And of course, as soon as we got in the room, she went right to sleep. She slept nice throughout the whole day. And I was going to do things with the day. I was getting a little bit tired too. I was like, well, good. Now I'll fall asleep. So I slept here. And that's it. And, you know, she's going to have to get used to the car. I have to teach her to get used to being in a car, to get less anxious. But that's only going to take time. The show at Idiot Box Comedy Club in Greensboro was fantastic. It was awesome. Honestly, it was everything I wanted a show to be. Like, it's a small venue, so it was almost, it was packed for its size, you know, however many people it was. All the comedians on the show were great. My set killed. The only problem is I forgot to hit record on the camera. That's the way it always works out. Every time you want to get a good tape done, something goes wrong. Either no audience shows up or they're dead. You get a bad spot in the lineup. You got to work hard to get them on board. They're not laughers. They're smilers. Yeah, thank you. Or like this. You forget like the perfect scenario. And this is what makes me mad. I need a new good submission tape. For those who don't know about the stand-up comedy world, we live and breathe off submission tapes. When we want to play at a place, you send them a video of your performance. It's usually, you know, the standard is 5 minutes. That's what everybody wants, a five-minute tape. If you're applying to do longer sets, sometimes they'll ask you for longer sets. Your credits don't matter. Your experience don't matter. Mostly probably because people lie. That's probably why nobody will trust credits. The tape is undeniable. And here's the problem with a tape. The tape has to be perfect. They're looking for any small imperfection to deny you entry to the festival, to book you at the club, to give you a guest spot. They're looking for everything that anything that can be possibly be bad, they'll hone in on it. So everything has to be perfect. Audio has to be perfect. Video has to be perfect. Jokes have to be perfect. Audience reaction has to be perfect. It's not enough for them to watch a tape, listen to your jokes, and subjectively listen to you and go, oh, this guy's funny, he's got jokes. This is just a bad audience. No. The audience is as important to your submission tape as your jokes, if not more. I'm willing to bet most people who aren't funny but that got good reactions from a crowd have gotten worked up because of tapes just like that. My tape is like 7 years old. I have one from 2001, actually from the Idiot Box Comic Club. It's a great tape, multiple camera angle, good sound, audience is into it. It's a fine tape, but it's not getting me work. So there's something in the tape that's not, I think I flubbed some lines in it. I don't know, maybe, I mean, it should be a good enough submission tape, but it's not working out. Last night would have been the new submission tape. And here's the best part, even if it wasn't a perfect submission tape, last night after the show, I was looking up places to try and get booked at while on this tour. And one of their rules to getting booked, you have to send a tape within the past 3 months. And even if this wasn't a perfect submission tape, it would have been a perfect enough. Here's a tape from last night. Here's last night. A couple hours away from you. An hour and a half away from you. This is what he did last night. Would have been perfect.
Oh, lady. Don't culturally appropriate my mental disorder. I am traveling the country right now doing comedy. If you want to, since I talk about mental health, if you want to help support the tour, after the show, if you want to see me, out of the trunk of my car, I'm selling coffee mugs. The reason I sell these coffee mugs, they have written on them, not until I've had my coffee, and coffee is scratched out, and it says antidepressants. Because it's the best way to tell your coworkers that you also live with a mental illness.
In the tape, you can see me turning on the camera using my watch as I realize, oh, I forgot to hit record. After this whole 3 month journey, if I cannot get a good submission tape out of this, it was not worth it. No, that's not true. It's not why I'm doing this. I need a submission tape, and I need this to work out and go well. But I can't have that kind of mindset of, oh, if something doesn't, if A does not happen, then all of this was a loss. I had that problem when I was in Chicago, when I went to Chicago. Shows I did in Chicago fell through. And I felt like I wasted the trip. But I didn't. I had an experience. Sister got to fly in a plane, which we're training her how to be a proper service dog on a plane. She did great on the two flights. I got to do some tourist things that I wanted to do because I need to do tourist things. Because I work in tourism now. And I gained an experience to be able to talk to people who come on my tours at Boston Duck Tours from Chicago. I can talk to them about Chicago in a true, honest, and engaging and authentic way. So that's what I have to remember for this trip, is that some of the stuff I'm going to be doing, I have to do in a, I'm here for the experience. If I get a tape out of it, great. Need it. Then that shouldn't ruin the tour, the trip for me, if I don't get it. Something I have to be mindful of. So next scheduled gig is in Atlanta at the, hopefully the Laughing Skull open mic. It's a pre-booked submission-based open mic. It's on a Monday, so it worked out. I mean, it's depending on the audience in there, I'm going to be doing either A material or open mic stuff. Like, here's the thing about open mics is, I talked earlier about it, that it's for everyone. Everyone should be allowed to, but also a lot of us use it as practice space. And it depends on where you're going and what's going on. Like, do you work on new jokes? Or this is the thing that you always have to be mindful of when you're in other cities as a comedian, is when you're performing at an open mic, are you working on new material or are you auditioning yourself for other comedians and bookers? For me, the Laughing Skull, I want to go there and do the open mic because I want the Laughing Skull booker to see me. So I want to crush, but I want an audience there to crush for. Will there be? I don't know. It's a Monday night. Who knows? Is it going to be a bunch of sad comedians all alone in a room, not paying attention to each other, refusing to laugh? We won't know till we do it. But I want the Laughing Skull people to see me do well. Can I do well with open mic material? Yeah, depending on the material. But do I want to guarantee my biggest chance of success of getting booked through them by giving them A material? Yes, that's what I want to do. So we'll see. Between now and then, we have a date. You know, today's Sunday. We're going to go do a trip, some tourist stuff, and then overnight drive to Atlanta, where Sister's going to have to learn to sleep during the car, or hopefully she slept up enough. She's asleep right now. Hopefully she'll be well rested when we get to Atlanta. All right, so after Greensboro, well, I hung out in Greensboro the next day. I went to did something touristy. I did, yay. Fulfilling that Boston Duck Tours UK Lee part of the tour is seeing tourist stuff. And I went to the Greensboro Museum of Science, which Museum of Science means it's gonna be like Edison and Tesla coils and all that, and it was a zoo and an aquarium. So there's a ropes course and a zip line here. I don't know that science, but it sounds like fun. But I can't do it because Sister doesn't like to climb. It was cool. No, the Museum of Science was cool. Unfortunately, it was too cold for the zoo part. Like, I tried walking around on the outside of the zoo part and just see some animals, and there was barely any animals because it was too cold and they're inside their habitats. So it's starting to snow, which is what we were expecting. It's very light right now, but I'm here at the Greensboro Science Center and the outdoor zoo part. There's some animals out. Most of the animals are not out. Obviously because of the cold. The ones that are out are either on their nap time now or just trying to conserve energy for the heat. And it was cold, and it snowed in Charlotte. Apparently, according to somebody I talked to, not Charlotte, Greensboro, sorry. I'll get to Charlotte, don't worry, we'll talk about Charlotte. But Greensboro is apparently the first time it snowed there in 3 years, according to two random people that I talked to at a dog park. Which, trying to find a dog park in these cities is hasn't been the easiest, especially when it's too cold. I have not looked, it's I'm in Florida right now, that's why I wanted to put the palm trees in the in, and it was 29 degrees when I crossed the Georgia-Florida line, and it's somewhere around 40 degrees now, which means I can, I know, 40 degrees, I can sit out in the sun in 40 degree weather and feel fine. So it was nice to see a different place. I mean, I'm not excited by aquariums. I tried. Yeah, they're cool fish, you know? I don't know, outdoor animals, zoo animals accept me a little bit more. So imagine my disappointment. And any ones that were out and about were probably napping.
I got a mudang.
I don't know if they were reserving body heat or if they were, if that was their nap time. Saw some goats, didn't we, sister? Sister has never seen a sheep or a goat before. She was quite confused. Not very interested, but confused. The chickens, there's a farm. There's farm animals there. Chickens had no interest in sister. Sister had no interest in the chickens. The donkeys. Yes, the donkeys were very interested. In fact, I think, feel like when talking about interest, the some of the based on the excitement, I think the kids at the Greensboro Science Center, their most exciting part of the trip was seeing sisters. The amount of kids that walked by went, ooh, a dog! It's like, yes, it's a dog.
He's sleep.
Hello, kitty. But I tried taking pictures and doing the touristy things and videos and stuff, so, you know. Try to put a little video. And there was a couple years back, I had an idea that, you know, there would be a great YouTube channel of touring comedians that did tour vlogs. I mean, that's basically what I'm doing here. You know, you remember like Casey Neistat and those things when he was super popular, just like showing the you know, the sweeping landscapes and all that. And as a comedian, you know, you could be doing that too. And I tried doing it, again, apprehensions and editing time, and it just never happened. So maybe this is that second attempt at that. Maybe I'm more interested in doing that now because of I work in tourism, you know? I'm not gonna do the landscape things, maybe. But I'm gonna see more tourist stuff because of work and because, you know, I'm gonna share the experience that I'm doing. I gotta do something else in the cities too. But there's also not a lot of time to do things. It's the only problem with driving is that driving is just complete loss of time. I mean, I guess I can, you know, write in my head, I can do Zoom meetings, I can do these things, but I guess I can, but we'll see. I'm not quite sure. It's just time driving. So I guess that's one reason why I've been driving overnight is that, you know, I don't sleep much at night anyway. Less traffic. What else was I gonna be doing other than sleeping? You know, I could pull over to the side of the road, sleep a little bit, and then start the car right up and go right back out there. Probably dangerous. I mean, when I get droggy, pull over, rest area, boom, take a nap, wake up. I only sleep 2 or 3 hours as it is anyway. So maybe that is the most effective use of my time. However, I'm also spending a lot of time in the daytime sleeping too, because I'm tired. Go figure it. But I gotta make time to do these. I have to make time to edit these videos. I gotta make time to go out doing the tourist things. So I don't know what tourist things are to do in Jacksonville today. I mean, here with family, so the family, spend time with them and sneak in a little nap. and then do some comedy tonight.
You can see the cats. Come on. Let's see the kitties. Cat just quack.
Trying to get palm trees in the view while also not showing you the dirt and construction. Also, I wanted to face the golf course that I snuck into to do this update because I don't want to get whacked by a golf ball. Charlotte was fine. Greensboro was even better. I really like the Idiot Box Comedy Club. I, you know, just talked about how I performed there, and I performed there a couple years back for the North Carolina Comedy Festival, and Jenny and Steve are doing a great job, and I hung out with Steve most of this time because I feel like Jenny's always too busy to talk to me, and I don't like bothering her. They're fostering a community there. That's what I like about the place. I've been there twice, and I've talked to the other comedians in the local area, and they're definitely trying to build a community of comedians, people that are communicating with each other, which is not a thing you find in most of the comedy communities that I'm starting to notice, especially when you go to larger cities. A lot of the larger cities are starting to seem more and more like they're trying to be a comedy scene, where you get too many people who are doing things like, the open mics that are comedians only and complaining about the crowd and actively driving people away because this is for me. I'm an artist. You know, they're trying to do these stereotypical things they hear out in podcasts that us older comedians, not us, I'm not part of the older comedy crowd, but older comedians talked about for the longest time of, you know, growing up in the comedy scenes where you do these, you know, nightmare gigs, and they're trying to create these nightmare scenarios. And they're not doing that at the Idiot Box. They're trying to create a positive community of people. Maybe it's the town, maybe it's the club, maybe it's just the people there, I don't know. But I'm enjoying hanging out there. I enjoyed the show. Everyone, like I said, came out and had a good time, and I'm still mad that I did not record my performance. So let's talk about Charlotte, the city, not the person. After the snow started coming down really hard and the Greensboro Science Center started closing, I decided to hit the road and hit the Charlotte. It's only like an hour and a half drive away. So I head down there to do just a quick open mic and then drive overnight to Atlanta. And it was at this tiki bar. Now I reached out to the organizers, two women who run it. I reached out to one of them and was like, hey, heads up. Is this still an open mic? Is it still going on? Can I come do a spot? And she's like, yeah. Two nice women, but it's the typical open mic. It's just all comedians and nobody's paying attention. And everyone's like, oh, sad. But it's in this tiki bar, in this complex of just like other establishments. You know, the typical, you know, new modern wave of places of, you know, you got your Tex-Mex place, you got your axe throwing bar, and then there's this tiki bar, and I'm talking to the guy, and they don't serve food there, which none of the places serve food. There was a sandwich shop and it wasn't open. Even talking to the guy, it's barely ever open. So it's like, how do you have this huge complex of establishments and then none of them serve food? And I'm talking to the guy, it's like, yeah, we're seasonal. I'm like, it's winter. What seasons do you operate in? Because if you're a tiki bar with outdoor seating, this is not your season. They're like, whoa, Christmas just ended. I'm like, yeah, okay. So it's like, were you something different for Christmas? It was like, well, we just took down all the Christmas decorations. I'm like, that's not what seasonal means. But anyway.
Like, the only thing I'm going to be first out of my group of friends is beating them to the grave. All right, don't fucking back up on me now, Rune, all right? This is an open mic, which means there's rooms full of comedians. Every single one of you know how much weight your ceiling fan can support. Hey, Angie, can you bring up the light a little bit? I think I made it too dark in here.
I have a drink or two, and I'm sitting there, and it's just... Comedian, stop asking the audience questions. Not even like crowd work wise. Like, I don't get this. Like, everybody at this open mic, their premise was always a question. You guys hear this? Do you guys know who P. Diddy is? Do you guys anywhere have kids? Like, just stop. Just tell your jokes. I don't know if people are asking these questions because they want to, like, try and establish something with the audience. Like, they're gonna make a connection somehow. I don't get it. Because it's never working out. It's never going off in your favor. It's never working the way I'm assuming you're expecting it to work. And I watched too many people, especially that night, just at shows in general, but especially that night where they're like, anybody here have kids? No, nobody has kids. Nobody, none of you are parents. All right, well, fuck that joke then, I guess. No, just, you know what the thing about kids is, and just tell your fucking jokes. I don't know if they're making these things, like, I watched comedians that every premise they set up was a question to talk to the audience. Especially if they're not a responsive audience, like a room full of comedians who are jaded and don't care about you or going to be. Then just give up the question thing, ask your questions. Too many people also still just saying things that, you know, that don't have punchlines. It's like, well, I guess you didn't like that. Well, there's nothing to like. Yeah, some of these premises are good, but you didn't say anything that was funny. I mean, you know, writing, it's, you know, comedy is writing. Writing takes effort. I guess everyone just thinks it's divine intervention, which just bugs me. I hate that. But it was fine. I did my set and, you know, people listened, they laughed, they, you know, it was okay. Host is super nice and enthusiastic woman. I would definitely go back to Charlotte and see if I can do one of their shows again. The two hosts, they're very, very kind, very welcoming, very positive influence. But I think it's, Charlotte is what I was talking about, where it's more of a city and they're doing this. We have an expectation of what comedy mics is supposed to be. We're gonna do it that way. Or maybe, I don't get it, maybe we do create these scenarios on our own because of our personality types. Charlie did not feel like a community.